of the Supervisors Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Today's date is March 22nd, 2007. Scheduled meeting time for 3:30 p.m. in Hearing Room B. Senator Brad Abaki in his chair.
Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources is open. And we are going to begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 569. And Senator Verger.
Would
you like me to mention the... Yeah, well, Senator Verger's coming up, Sue. Why don't you fill us in?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 569 eliminates the restriction under current law on issuance of sturgeon propagation permits for commercial purposes. It directs the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules relating to permits, sets annual fee for a permit allowing propagation of sturgeon for commercial purposes, allows the commission to give priority to certain permit holders when considering applications for a permit. There is a proposed amendment. Would you like me to mention that now?
Yes.
Okay. There's a proposed amendment that would allow these permits to be issued through the calendar year 2010 for the collection of male white sturgeon and of eggs from oversized female white sturgeon for commercial aquaculture in accordance with rules adopted by the commission. We've received a fiscal statement. There's a minimal expenditure impact.
Something for people to just keep in mind as we go here. This bill is going to be passed out of committee today. I want folks to have their full say in the bill, but we also need to get Senator Bates on an airplane for other legislative business as soon as possible. So when you could, just give me some quick testimony. Make sure you let us know that you're in favor of the amendments, and then we will get our work done. Senator Verger, very glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Joanne Verger. I represent District 5. Mr. Chairman, we often spend a lot of time on business recruitment. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Harry Noah, who is a very fine businessman and would like to expand his business, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Noah and have him talk to you about that.
Nice to see you again, Mr. Noah.
Nice to see you.
You go ahead and state your name for the record.
My name is Harry Noah. I'm with a company by the name of Yaquina Bay Fruit Processors. And kind of taking your direction, I'm going to make this very brief. We are in support of this particular bill as it is written and the amendments. We see an opportunity to diversify our business from what we are currently doing and provide another product for sale. And it's an opportunity to also grow our business, where we would see approximately 30 additional jobs if we can develop the facilities both in Newport and Coos Bay. And with that said, I'll be happy to answer any questions, because it seems that might be the easiest thing. But I would like to make two comments, if I might.
Please do.
This is not a particularly glamorous bill, and Senator Verger took this up, and it's something that if it works and an industry is developed, it's something that will be an accomplishment. And I just wanted to say thank you to her and to other people that have signed on to the bill, and so thank you. And then the second thing is that the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the staff, particularly John Thorpe and Steve Williams, has really kind of gone out of their way to work with us. And I just wanted to say thank you to them also. So if I can answer any questions.
Nicely said. Committee?
I may have missed it. Is he in favor of the Dash 1 amendments?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Steve Williams, Roy Elliker, and Joe... Roll? Thank you. Oh, Joe. Yeah, sure. Come on up. Oh, Joe. It's Joe. Sorry, just couldn't
leave.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome. For the record, my name is Roy Elker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Charge of Fish and Wildlife Programs.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to give these comments, and we'll keep them brief. Chair Vaki, in view of your kind of advice to us. In particular, we have some written testimony, which I'll just refer to. This state is blessed. And Columbia River has probably one of the last great wild white salmon sturgeon populations on the face of the earth. And the bill goes a long way towards keeping Columbia River populations in the robust state they're in now, as well as opening up some opportunity with close scrutiny by the commission. and particularly with particular attention paid to disease and pathology issues, to allow some commercial operation, some commercial aquaculture operations of white and green sturgeon. Idaho has some folks that operate there in those businesses, as well as California. California in particular has done a lot of work on this issue. Some of the folks down there are making some money at this point. Perhaps others can speak to that. But since 1989, we've allowed no commercial sturgeon aquaculture here. And that was based primarily in the late 80s over a number of well-publicized poaching issues that came up over broodstock sturgeon in the Columbia River, which is why at the time then the law was written so to prescribe commercial aquaculture. But we think we've worked a lot with Harry Noah and others and Senator Berger and others on this bill. And we feel this is a good chance for Oregon, in a very closed and protective way, to get in and allow some private opportunity for commercial aquaculture. And that's our testimony from the department.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Williams, anything to add?
Nothing to add.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Joe Rollater. I live in Walport, Oregon, and I represent Desert Springs Trout Farm, which is a big live trout aquaculture producer at Summer Lake. We support this bill with its amendments. If you've been in a seafood restaurant lately, you'll notice that there is very high-quality sturgeon available on menus now, and that sturgeon comes from Idaho aquaculture industry. I'd like to see that from the Oregon aquaculture industry. I think it would be a big boost for us and our industry, and it's very good meat. So thank you very much, sir.
Very good.
I'm sorry, one other thing, Senator Vakian, I might just add for the committee's background, we did add this report as Appendix 1, which basically just lays out some information on the current stock condition in the Columbia River, including fisheries and other issues. Just thought it might be some valuable background for the committee members.
Good. Thank you. Committee, any questions?
Mr. Chair. Sorry, I thought I was
going. Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Roy, I think you know what I'm going to ask you. Last session, introduced a virtually identical bill. And we went round and round and round all session long, and we never got anywhere. Curious to know what changed, why you guys are supporting it now, and you didn't support it last year. In last section, Section 3 in particular, we finally had to remove from the bill, because that's the that is four little words, because it was creating all the controversy. And let me know kind of what's
Senator 3. I'm sorry, Senator. Those three blue words you mentioned again are in section what?
Section 3 of the bill. OS 497-330 is repealed. And that's the Pelfrey special permit.
Yeah. Right.
And the amendment takes that out.
Right. Well, Senator, as you remember from last session, we did come very close to coming up and putting a bill that was going to go through on sturgeon aquaculture. Probably one of the biggest problems we had was trying to find a way to take care of pathology issues, which can be considerable, particularly in startup of a commercial nature like this. As you can see, probably a huge difference between this bill and last year is there's a $3,000 annual fee for folks who are going to get into this business. And that ensures that these folks will have high-quality pathology work done by the department, and ensures the department will not be using other fishing license dollars to subsidize this whole new commercial aquaculture. So if you remember, the money was a big issue, and finally that's where it broke down in Ways and Means, is trying to figure out how to get enough money to cover even a part-time pathology position to help these folks move as they get into the business. So I think we were able to resolve that with this very high annual fee. And I guess the second thing is that, and Henry Pelfrey's permit, I guess, to get to the shortcut here, we spent some time speaking to Mr. Pelfrey, and he felt that if he had some time to phase out his broodstock collection, that he could do it. And so that's why we came up with the amendment. So I think we resolved the two major issues from last session, but I do appreciate your help on that last session, Senator Beyer. And like I said, we got very close, and hopefully with this one we can get there.
With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 569, and I will open up a work session on 569. And before I take, I'll need a motion on the amendment, and then we'll need a motion on the bill. I do want to say that at the beginning of the session, when Senator Berger and I co-sponsored this bill to get it moving, I did not realize that this bill had been presented in previous sessions. And I do want to recognize and thank you, Senator Beyer, for getting this ball rolling last time. It's become a very good bill. I think it will help industry in Oregon. And to Mr. Ellicker and the department, the legislature understands very well both the cultural and other importance of preserving the sturgeon in this region. And I'm glad you were able to find a compromise that allows you to do that, because that issue of preservation is important to the legislature as well. So thank you for the department's efforts. With that, can I have a motion?
Mr. President.
Sorry, I hope he's not watching.
Mr. Chair, I would move Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 569.
Senator Bates moves the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. Any discussion? No objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 569 be passed out with due pass recommendation. I believe it's going directly to the floor, isn't it?
Yes.
To the floor. And I'd like to make a comment, if I could.
Right now?
Just real quick. No, finish the vote first.
Senator Bates moves 569 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? And no objections? Then so ordered as well. And Senator Virgil, would you please carry the bill?
Okay. I just like to say, when I saw Senator Berger and Senator Vakian's name on this bill, I thought that something might be fishy. But further reservations were dropped when I read the bill. The pathology question, though, is a real one, and that's, I think, one of the things that this bill takes care of. We've had real problems with broodstock passing disease into other fishes, whirling disease and rainbow trout, certain types of gill disease, and others coming from not only from commercial but from state-owned hatcheries. So it's a real one, and having resolved that, I think this is a great bill. Good luck, and I hope we have lots of sturgeon in our future on the plate. Thank you.
With that, I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 156. And Sue, if you could remind us of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 156 creates a State Drinking Water Advisory Committee to advise and assist the Department of Human Services. There, we've received a fiscal impact statement. It's a minimal expenditure impact. There's no amendments and no referral.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Committee? Any discussion? I would only note for the record that the testimony from Gail Shively when we did the public hearing was that this is a committee that, of course, has been up and operating for some time. This just gives it the statutory authorization. Are there any objections?
We need a motion, I think.
Oh, we do. Thank you. Thank you.
I move Senate Bill 156 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any discussion?
And now there's an objection.
And one objection noted, Senator Beyer. And with that, so ordered. And Carrier, Senator Posansky, will you please?
All righty. Water's our friend, right?
Matt, would you mind calling up to Senator Schrader's office and telling him we're going to his bill next? It will not take him long to get here, so I am going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 514. And Sue, while we're waiting for Senator Schrader, maybe you can fill us in on that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 514 establishes a property tax special district assessment for land subject to conservation easements, allows land presently subject to farm use or forest land special assessment to be transferred to a conservation easement special assessment without payment of additional tax, requires owner of land placed under conservation easement to file written certification with a county assessor, permits the owner or other qualified person to withdraw an application within 30 days of applying for change in classification from conservation easement or wildlife habitat easement to other special assessment category. This applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2008. It does have a subsequent referral to Senate Finance and Revenue Committee.
Committee's going to stand at ease just for a minute. Senator Schrader gets here.
didn't know that. Are the counties as yeah, that's a surprise.
Hi, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
Well, we didn't wait long.
Good.
But since we've got you here, can we talk about a few things the co-chair has brought up real quick? If you want this bill.
Yeah.
Senator, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Kurt Schrader, Senate District 20, and I appreciate the opportunity to have Senate Bill 514 heard by the committee. I'll be fairly brief. There's others in the room perhaps a little more knowledgeable about a lot of the programs that we're talking about here. But the bill is very simple. It frankly allows the tax exemption concept to roll over, if you will, from one good conservation measure to another. Those that are interested and have been protecting our farm and forest land through the special assessment opportunities that the state has had should not be penalized by going to a new special assessment that also preserves farm, forest, and natural resource land through a conservation easement type of assessment. And I think this makes good sense. I actually had a constituent friend of mine actually in Canby run into this exact problem just this past year, and we worked with our legislative council people and folks and found that there was this, well, kind of a loophole where it seemed like it should be a no-brainer. You should be able to roll something over like this, and apparently there would be a huge, they'd have to pay back all the taxes and only to get it put into another deferment program that is, I think, a very good cause, helps protect our environment, the wildlife, and our natural resources and habitat. So I got very interested when this came forward. It's, again, non-regulatory type of approach to conservation and environmental cause, and I think it's a really good bill and would hope the committee would look favorably upon it.
Committee? Thank you, Senator Schrader.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Jim Welsh, Cattlemen Association.
Chair Bacon and committee members, Jim Welsh with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. Mr. Chair, we oppose Senate Bill 514, and, you know, we're coming out of agriculture, and maybe for some of you that's very difficult to understand in some ways, but you have before you our comments there very shortly on one page, but, you know, the original intent of the farm use assessment was to recognize, you know, with farm deferrals and everything, recognize the impact that agriculture provides Oregon's character and certainly to the economy. Now, with the conservation easement, we understand there's the property owners that do get some compensation for those easements and very possibly for some good reasons and everything, but then to follow up with a special assessment here and reduce the revenue to the county, we feel is going just too far. Okay, and we explain all the reasons there. We understand that the counties today are, many of them, and certainly we've been going through the secure rural school funding issue and asking the Congress to recognize that in the forest counties that we have some problems. So in agriculture overall here, we think that we can contribute, should contribute, and certainly our counties, I think, would appreciate that. And any removal of property that could be productive property certainly is, goes against some of the things that we stand for also. But we feel this certainly goes too far, and we explain that here in our comments. And we would hope that you would not pass this out. Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
Any question?
Senator Bates. Conservation easements of this nature, as I understand it, maybe I'm incorrect, allow that farming and agriculture purposes and timber harvest still can continue on those lands, right? Am I wrong?
Chair Bakey and Senator Bates, that is correct. And that's fine, but then there's a certain amount of that property, if they're conservation easements, as I understand, will be used and taken out of production, very possibly. And that's okay if that's a property owner's decision to do that, okay, all right. But then to follow up here with special assessment and a property tax reduction, reducing those revenues to your county, it kind of goes against what some of us are holding is very important to certainly our counties and our contribution as those in agriculture.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Welsh. Next, Carlene McCabe, Commissioner Mike Probst, Cheryl Hummond. And while you three are coming up, Willie Tiffany of the League of Oregon Cities slipped me a note, just wanted me to put on the record that the League of Oregon Cities supports the bill. With that, Ms. McCabe, whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Carlene McCabe, and I'm the director of the Greenbelt Land Trust out of Benton County. And I just wanted to speak on behalf of the bill. I'm here to represent our members of the Greenbelt Land Trust in support of Senate Bill 514. We work with private landowners who wish to voluntarily protect their land with the permanent conservation easement. I've received five phone calls this week from landowners in Benton, Polk, and Marion County who would like to work with us on these types of programs. We in the land trust community in Oregon support this bill because it will remove a barrier that for some landowners is an issue that they face as they consider using an easement on their properties. The bill enhances their private landowners' property rights by allowing them to retain the property tax benefits while continuing to protect the farm, forest, and natural areas that they have on their properties. We urge you to support this bill and remove this what we see and they see as a disincentive for conservation that some of the landowners we work with face. Thank you.
Commissioner Probst.
Thank you, Chairman, committee members. Yes, I'm Mike Probst, Polk County Commissioner, and I also turned in some testimony from Lincoln County, and I do support the bill. We were the pilot county for this approach back in the early 90s that actually was pilot for this exact approach. There were two counties that were a pilot for this, Yamhill County and Polk County, to see how a concept like this would work that went through the legislature. And the pilot was set up to see how it would work with property owners and how the effects would be on a county and, you know, the tax effects and working. And we worked with Fish and Wildlife. We worked with the property owners, OSU Extension, and the pilot worked out very well. There was quite a bit of land in the county that was put in to the program, and it went in went from farm into open space wildlife deferral. This is an easement this time. Of course, there wasn't an easement program then, and some of the concerns that were brought up then was the loss of production and the type of things that you just heard. But the concept that we had was that a lot of land were being forced and a lot of regulations on property owners. We came up with the idea, what if you have property owners that want to do these things on their property, and you can have enough property owners that you get this type of thing done voluntarily, and you get habitat in your counties through a voluntary program instead of through a regulatory program. That's why we originally came up with the idea. And it actually worked very well in our county. At the same time, most of those lands still stayed in production, but they were able to go far beyond the production in some areas on their property for wildlife without losing their deferral. And that was the concept we were after, is not lose your deferral, which otherwise they would have lost their deferral. That's exactly what we were after. they would have been penalized without the pilot program. Why penalize somebody if they want to have that type of contribution? And if we can do enough of that on private property in areas, then do we have to keep regulating it and forcing people to do it where they don't want to do it? That was our idea. That's why we believe this is a good program, because it appears there's other people that want to do it out there. And can we get enough in this in Oregon so we don't have to keep putting more regulations on? That makes sense to me. Is if people will voluntarily do this on their properties and we get enough habitat that way so we don't have to keep continuing to regulate other lands. So, and the piece about the loss to county government, the deferral is the same price. It's not a loss to county government under this program. The tax deferral is exactly the same, and the cost of implementing the program is paid for by the applicant. So it's a wash to us. The pilot program did cost us. That's been fixed under this bill. So
very good. Thank you, Commissioner.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Hummon with Defenders of Wildlife, and I think you should have written testimony from me, probably two pieces of paper, I think. First, I'd like to thank you, Chair Avakian, for the opportunity and members of the committee to address this bill. I'd like to step back into history for a minute. This isn't in my written testimony, but since Senator Beyer was mentioning in the last bill about remembering it from previous session, I'll just go ahead and say now that this is a bill that we came before you in 2005, and the bill passed through Senate committees and the full Senate with bipartisan support, and then it stalled in the House. It didn't come under a vote in the House. And also a piece of history, we did, as Commissioner Probst mentioned, we did work with the counties. As soon as we knew about their concern about the application fee, we worked that in, and there's no further issues that we're aware of with the counties. So what this bill does is it fixes an inconsistency in the law. Currently, as you've heard from other people, some landowners face back property taxes and lose their access to special assessment when they consider permanently protecting their land with a conservation easement. Current Oregon law, which was from incentive bills in 01 and 03, established state policy to provide incentives for voluntary conservation and to remove disincentives, including property tax disincentives, for landowners who may be interested in doing voluntary conservation. And the backside of the rather texty piece of paper has the statutory references and some bold language, so you can easily see that it is state policy to encourage private landowners to do voluntary conservation with incentives and to remove disincentives that may stand in the way, including tax disincentives. So this bill simply cleans up this little loophole, I think, as Senator Schrader called it, and fixes that little discrepancy within the law. The purpose of Senate Bill 514 is to establish this new conservation easement special assessment for property taxes in parallel with the other special assessment programs for farm, forest, and wildlife habitat. And we work closely with the Department of Revenue to make sure that, you know, all the ducks were in a row in terms of how the statute would be written, to make sure that all of the special assessments are in alignment with each other. And basically what happens is that a landowner who qualifies for any of them, any special assessment that they qualify for, they can use. And they can move from one to another if they have a reason to. And if they no longer qualify for any special assessment, including this one, then they owe the back taxes and they pay their full property taxes. In most cases, the conservation easement special assessment would be revenue neutral, as Commissioner Probst pointed out, and in all cases, if it was farmland, it would be revenue neutral because they would be moving from the farm special assessment into conservation easement special assessment, and the way the property taxes are calculated is it just says, look at last year and pay the same thing. So it's revenue neutral for any land that that was in the farm deferral and special assessment program. In addition, the bill is completely neutral on the concept of whether land is taken out of production. It doesn't discuss that at all. Some land may be taken out of production if people are trying to move from farm or forestry to more habitat uses, but many easements include areas that are still used for economic production and then other more sensitive areas for habitat. The definition of conservation in the bill follows the definition used by the Internal Revenue Code for a conservation donation to qualify for a federal income tax deduction.
Yeah, just in the interest of time, testimony is very important, but we will make sure we have your written document.
Okay.
So if you want to just very quickly summarize the points that you think are most important,
yes,
rather than going through the whole document, that would be very helpful to us.
I think one important thing that we didn't make clear last year is that the definition of conservation includes four categories. One is habitat. One is One important thing that we didn't make clear last year is that the definition of conservation includes four categories. One is habitat. One is open space, which includes farm and forest land explicitly recognized as a conservation purpose, scenic lands, and also historic value, which easements can also be used for. And the land trusts are very familiar with working with this definition. We've worked with many partners over the last several years on this concept, including the original interim work group on incentives back in 2002, which had many diverse partners, private ag interests, private forest interests. And we would urge you to support the bill and move it out of committee and keep it moving. Thank you very much for your time.
Senator Beyer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who the best person to answer this question is, but tell me what a typical easement looks like as far as how much does the landowner receiving, what does the landowner normally have to do to qualify or provide that? I'd like to start with those.
Do you want to do that? The easements come to us in two different ways. We have some landowners who donate them to us. They receive no monetary compensation from us or from any agency. What they can qualify for is, under the federal tax code, there is the ability to get some reduction in their adjusted gross income. A little complicated how that works. But in order to get that, it has to meet the federal standard for a conservation easement. So it can't be just any property. You have to provide one of the four areas that Cheryl mentioned, open space, resource production, farming, forest land, recreation, habitat protection, historic preservation, or scenic conservation. And when we write those easements, we are very careful about citing which sections qualify, because the IRS looks at those and reviews them to make sure that it does meet that qualification. In terms of how they work, how one is actually written, I'll reference the most recent one we did was on a piece of farmland in Benton County on the Luckinead River. The farmer approached us a few years ago. He has a 183-acre farm that he grows a variety of things on. That farm has about a mile and a half of stream frontage on the Luckinead River and also a half a mile on Price Creek. What he wanted to do was to protect those stream corridors, but he also wanted to continue to farm the property. So the easement is written in such a way that there's protection for those stream corridors, although he can still do some activities in there. He does still graze in there periodically to control invasive weeds and so on. And then the agricultural portion of the property has stayed in agricultural production, but what he agreed to is he would not build houses on that portion of the property. So the easements can vary, and we try to work with the landowners to be creative and to make it work in all those categories. We're working right now with a ranch landowner in Benton County who wishes to protect the property and both continue to ranch it, but also it has some significant habitat types on the property that they would like to continue to protect. They've done that on their own over the years, too.
Just a follow-up, I guess, is how much is this person getting paid for this easement, and how long is the contract?
The easement easements are in perpetuity. That's what the federal government, if you donate an easement, it has to be in perpetuity. That's the code. If we were to purchase an easement, it can vary. Some landowners will do, under some of the federal programs, they can do 30-year easements. All of the easements we have done are in perpetuity. So in the case of the landowner in the Lucky Mute, he was paid approximately $210,000. That came from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board funding. And that value was based on an appraisal of that property. So he's pays, it's a little complicated. It depends on the rights that he is selling us. So he sold us, he didn't sell too many rights on the agricultural piece with the exception of the housing, right? But he retained the ag rights. And then on the other property, it's a little more complicated. It goes through the appraisal process.
A final question, if you can answer it, with that, the payment he received, the $210,000, was that a lump sum, and is that considered a capital gain, ordinary income, or?
It was a lump sum, and it's considered a capital gain based on his basis in the property. In his case, some landowners, it would still be a capital gain, but for some people, if they bought the property, say, for $1 million, but they're only selling us some of the rights, then they're not gaining on the whole property. They're just getting some income. It's still capital. It's classified, though, on the tax code as a basis in your property. They look at the basis of your property, so a capital gains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, the three of you. Commissioner, thank you for being here. Sharon Livingston and Senator Walker, just so you know, for time-wise, your bill is up next. We just have one more person to testify on this bill. Welcome, Ms. Livingston. I understand you drove a long way to get here, or flew 300 miles.
I left home at 7:30 this morning, and I've been to two meetings already. My name is Sharon Livingston. I reside in Long Creek, Oregon. I'm currently serving as president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I testified opposing this bill in 2005. I will tell you this, that I operate a cattle ranch. In the summertime, I'm probably feeding about 40 head of elk. Right now, I have 25 head of deer that I counted yesterday, eating $125 ton alfalfa hay with my bulls. I have a bald eagle sitting in the tree opposite my house. I do not expect anyone to pay me for a conservation easement. That's part of being a good steward of the land. I enjoy being a landowner, a property owner. I pay my taxes. I'm very happy to have the wildlife there. I sat on the North Fork Watershed Council for several years, and I saw at least two abuses of conservation easements asking for dollars from OWEB. I felt like OWEB dollars were designed for other purposes, and so, again, I am opposing this bill. I don't think that a county has to ask for back taxes. I could be wrong, but I don't think they do when someone takes out a conservation easement. I believe that it is our responsibility as landowners to provide habitat. I think that we receive benefits from that, and I don't think we should be paid for those. Thank you, sir.
Nothing from the committee. Thanks for making the trip to the Capitol and
Thank you.
Your testimony today. And
with, nice to be here. Thank you all.
And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 514 and open a work session on Senate Bill 514. If I could have a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I would ask that we refer Senate Bill 514 to Senate Finance and Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Committee, any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to oppose the motion to send it to the committee, but I am going to have to go back and do some more research and check and see the history of this program. And so if the bill gets out of that committee on the floor, I may be voting against it at that time.
Fair enough. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 514, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 490. Senator Walker. Yeah, well, Senator Walker's coming up soon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 490 authorizes the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules prohibiting the use of Internet or closed-circuit media to remotely control a weapon for the purpose of hunting or taking any game animal, wildlife, game mammal, or other mammal. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There are dash 1 and dash 2 amendments. Would you like to talk about those now?
Yes.
Okay. The dash 1 amendments would require, rather than being just permissive, on for the State Fish and Wildlife Commission, after consultation with the State Department of Agriculture, to adopt rules prohibiting the use of Internet to remotely control a weapon for the purpose of hunting. And the dash 1 removes the exemption from the proposed prohibition on Internet hunting for the State Department of Fish and Wildlife and for any public body. The dash 2s, the difference between dash 1 and dash 2, dash 2 would allow would make it permissible for Fish and Wildlife to exercise this this program, but it would prohibit all other public bodies.
Thank you, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I remember to say that this time. I'm only interested in the Dash 2 amendment. The Dash 1 is sort of going away, if it's your pleasure. The department had some issues with the Dash 1, so yesterday we got together in your office without your presence and came to Jesus on this bill, so to speak.
It happens in my office a lot. Jesus,
when you're not there, huh?
When I'm not there, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that might be true. Let me just give you a brief background. I know you're in a hurry, so I'll be quick. I was out door knocking, otherwise known as campaigning, this past year, and knocked on a woman's door who said, "Do you know anything about Internet hunting?" And I said, "Well, I certainly do." And she asked me why we didn't prohibit it in Oregon, and I said, "Well, that little bill got hung up last session over bears and cougars." So, and dogs, I think. So, I asked Legislative Council to redraft the bill from last session. I contacted Ms. Peterson to let her know I was doing that, and so that's why we're here. The department had committed to doing this by rule, but they've had 2 years to do it, and they didn't get it done. So I have in my file a note from Marla Ray, chair of the commission, and she says, "I popped by to visit for a minute about the Internet hunting bill. I want to assure you that the commission has plans to take this up soon, most likely at our June meeting." So the commission is interested in taking up this bill, or these provisions, and I just thought we might as well pass the bill and make sure they do it. No one appreciates Internet hunting and killing animals from their desktop. Let me just tell you what the Dash 2 does. The Dash 2 amendment, on page 2, it eliminates the may, so it directs the department to do it. So it says shall, and they're okay with that, and I would say that would be true. Secondly, we deleted the words "or taking," because when the department came by to see me, they gave me their administrative enforcement of wildlife laws, a page out of their book. I photocopied it, and the word "hunt" includes the word "take." So, "or taking" is redundant. To hunt means to take or attempt to take any wildlife. So we remove the redundancy. And then secondly, I wanted to remove the provision in the bill that said any public body as defined in ORS 174-109 could be exempt. Well, I looked that one up, Mr. Chair, and that's just about any public body in the state of Oregon. City, county, state, anything called a public body. So they agreed to remove that broad language.
language. So we're here trying to fix a problem that may never be a problem in Oregon, but it's one we shouldn't have. The department did want the ability to be able to use closed circuit television to trap an errant animal, and they said a dart gun and a dart net would be considered a weapon, so if we prohibited them from being able to use closed circuit television, they wouldn't be able to capture an animal. I assured the department that if I ever heard of them or anyone they knew that they gave permission to shoot an animal from their desktop, I would hunt them down. They assured me that they would turn themselves in if anything like that ever happened. So it's not to be used for them to shoot an animal from a desktop computer. It's simply to monitor a situation and perhaps send a net over an animal. Okay.
With that clear directive, I'm not so sure the bill is even necessary anymore. we will. We thank you, Senator. For people who are going to be testifying, there are four other people signed up on this bill. Mr. Elker, maybe you'll be the only one from ODF&W. Keep your testimony to underneath 60 seconds if you can, because the committee intends to move this bill, and we have two other bills to hear today. Peterson, I see you.
Chair Rocking and committee members, my name is Kelly Peterson. I'm the Oregon Program Director for the Humane Society of the United States. We have about 120,000 members and constituents in Oregon. With that, then, we support the Dash 2 amendment.
The bill should pass?
Yeah. Especially with the understanding that even the state of Oregon won't have an exemption.
Very good. Thank you. Roy Elker and Paul Phillips. Senator Walker, your other bill is up next.
Oh, thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Bakken, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elker, Deputy Director for Fish and Wildlife Programs in the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think Senator Walker has very adequately, or more than adequately, defined what went on yesterday in your office, Mr. Chair. And with the Dash 2 amendments, the agency will move ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Phillips from Wilsonville, Oregon, representing the Safari Club International, Portland Chapter. We support Senate Bill 490 with the Dash 2 amendments. It's similar to bills that we've introduced in previous sessions. Good bill should pass.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Yes, Roy. The prohibition of being able to shoot any animal from a closed circus, I can envision something you get in some sort of invasive species, and I don't even want to mention the wolf word, but in the instance of a wolf, the one wolf that was trapped and taken back to Idaho, how did you capture and how did you find that wolf?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, you may have been eavesdropping yesterday in our conversation with Senator Walker because that was actually an issue for us. The bill is written, especially with the Dash 1 amendments, really was so broad as to exclude even the scientists that deal in fish and wildlife, the Department of Fish and Wildlife folks, from using technology to do monitoring of wildlife and capturing of wildlife. And in fact, as we speak, in several areas in northeastern Oregon, we have monitoring stations set up because we keep hearing of wolves in certain areas. And so we have cameras over what we call scent stations right now to try and capture, at least by picture, whether or not there is, in fact, a wolf or wolves in that area. And in future technology, there might be a time when we use a closed circuit kind of monitoring system to actually trap a wolf. Either with a lake hole trap or a special trap or whatever. And so, again, with the Dash 2 amendments, the agency is fine with it. But you're exactly right. There might be times where this technology is needed by the department.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess maybe I'm concerned that what Senator Walker specifically said, that if the department ever hunts or shoots an animal by use of a camera or computer, that she will hunt you down. But what if there is, and I'm trying to think of an African wild dog or something, some species gets introduced and is out in, you know, the or feral hogs, that would be a good example, that they are wrecking the environment, creating havoc on other wildlife species, and the only way you can get them is to, set up a camera that's hooked to a gun to go get it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, we don't have any experience with a camera and a gun concept. I mean, like I said, it's hard to envision even 5 years from now, 10 years from now, about technology and where this might go. But that's specifically why we wanted the exemption for the department and its agents, because in some situations, particularly disease issues or damage issues, that exactly might come into play at some time in the future. And that's why I thought, and in the end we came to some agreement that really the commission, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, which deals very specifically in fish and wildlife issues and technical issues on a monthly basis, is probably the place to fine-tune this kind of situation. And so that's why we're fine with the dash twos.
So just to be clear, the bill, even with the dash twos, would not prohibit the agency from taking an animal via remote control if you need to.
Chair Vonkin.
I think that was a yes or a no answer. Question.
The question, I guess the way the bill is written today, and with the Amendment 2, with rulemaking by the Commission, there might be some situation in the future where an animal might be taken using some remote control, whether it's a monitoring system or something else. Yes.
Thank you. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 490, open a work session on 490, and entertain a motion on the dash twos.
I'll move the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 490.
Thank you, Senator Bates, for moving the dash twos into the bill. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Thank you. None. So ordered. And could I have a motion on the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 490% to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Bates, for moving the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I just want to say that I'm glad to see the state of Texas, my birth state, that where this actually originated, already has banned this type of hunting. So it's nice to see they are correcting an error, and we're going to keep one from occurring.
Terrific. Following in the footsteps of Texas. Any objections to the bill? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Walker, would you carry the bill?
Sure. I can see you through the bill.
And I will open a public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 2. Sue, if you will.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 2 urges Congress to extend the renewable electricity production credit until 2018. There is a dash one amendment that changes the actually updates the renewable energy goal for Oregon to 25% by the year 2025.
Thank you, Sue. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I was wondering about that this morning, if we'd gotten an amendment to reflect the renewable energy standard that you have been discussing at quite length here in your committee. This bill, this memorial, comes to you from my Senate Interim Committee on Natural Resources and Alternative Energy, and the reason it's important is because Congress in this current administration, actually it's the current administration, has not been so generous at extending the renewable electricity production tax credit as they have been with other tax credits for the oil industry, et cetera, et cetera. These tax credits are incredibly important for people when they're developing renewable energy because they depend on them to develop long-term plans. So we're just asking that we make this a long-term extension of the tax credit. And, Mr. Chair, I served for 2 years, well, 18 months, on the Western Governors Association Clean and Diversified Energy Advisory Committee. We have a report here. I shared that with you at one of our earlier meetings. And one of the national policy recommendations of that committee, which was by several Western states, was to extend the long-term production tax credit and investment tax credit. So that across all clean energy technologies. So that's why the bill is here for you today. And I'll let Mr. Green from the Department of Energy talk about it.
Welcome, Mr. Greening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Rainey from Department of Energy. Let me just add that I think this is this production tax credit for renewable energy is the single most important action federal government takes to promote renewable energy. It's been vital to make wind and other renewable energies cost competitive. Unfortunately, it's been extended only a year or two at a time, and that's caused great uncertainty in financing in the industry. Other tax credits, for example, in 2005, the last time this was extended, Congress established a production tax credit for nuclear energy that goes for 15 years. And we think at a minimum, renewable energy should be given at least the same amount of time. So this is a very good memorial, and I think it's very timely.
Very good. Committee? Seeing nothing? Nothing. Thank you very much. And I will close the public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 2. Open up a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 2. Senator Bates, could you give me a motion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, could I move that the Dash 1 amendments be moved into Senate Joint Memorial 2?
Thank you, Senator Bates, for moving the Dash 1 amendments. Any discussion?
Yes,
Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, just the number 10 versus the number 25. Do we currently have a goal of either 10 or 25?
I am guessing that they are anticipating what the legislature might do in the next couple months.
I can appreciate that, Mr. Chair, but I'm just curious to know, I mean, if we're memorializing Congress as something that may or may not happen, but do we have a current goal of 10, I guess is the first question, and...
Mr. Graham, is there a current goal of 10?
Mr. Chairman, no, but the 25% by 2025 was one of the recommendations of both the Renewable Energy Working Group and the Governor's Advisory Committee on Global Warming that was established a couple of years ago.
Stay there for just a minute, Mr. Graney.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski.
Looking at lines 15 and 16, Mr. Graney, why would we have in there a goal of supplying 10% of its energy needs through the renewable resources in 2020 if that's not already in our goals or I'm not even going to say mandate because it's not a mandate.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brzezinski, I think that's why you have the amendment. The changes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it was drafted maybe thinking that's where we were going at one point, and then yeah. Now it reflects what like our new goal is anticipated to be by 2025.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brzezinski, yes, and also based on the recommendations of these other groups.
You go ahead, Senator Bates.
Senator Chair, it seems to me that the Morris has a goal of supply. I think Senator Byers may have a point here. Am I reading this correctly?
What do you mean?
Well, we obviously hope to have that. Do we have it in place in?
Yeah, hopes to have a goal of.
Expect to have.
There's Mr. Chair, if I may.
Suggestion. If I might.
Senator Kozanski, you want to wait just one moment and we'll see.
Hold my breath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it is the goal of the state of Oregon, but if it's coming from the Legislative Assembly and it is our stated goal, you may hold this bill until we, at such time as we have a renewable energy standard of 25% or whatever percent we come out with. So if that is causing some angst, we can do that. I believe Mr. Graney is correct, though. It is the goal of the working group and of the Renewable Energy Task Force.
I appreciate you saying that, Senator Walker. I think what we will do is we will not go to a vote on the bill today. We appreciate the testimony today, and we will wait and see whether or not that becomes the official goal of the Legislative Assembly as opposed to the Executive Branch, and then we will bring this bill back before us if that occurs.
And Mr. Chairman, another option might be to drop those two lines. I don't think they're critical to the sense of support for the production tax credit.
Mr. Chair, I'll breathe now. I was going to make the same suggestion that Senator Walker has made. It seems to me that we can hold on to it to see how this plays out. on the Senate side. Of course, the other thing is you could move it on to the House and let it sit, and it could sit over there, but at the same time, knowing how we would like to make sure we have it right, I don't know, it seems like we've got some time before we need to make any drastic changes or decisions.
Well, let's just hold the bill. We'll bring it back afterwards. Thank you very much, Senator Byer. Thank you for bringing that to the attention of the committee. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 2. I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 236, which is the last bill of the day today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 236 creates a voluntary lifetime brand inspection for Equidae, expands Oregon Department of Agriculture Authority collect brand inspection fees, removes brand inspection certification requirements for livestock other than cattle, replaces fee fund system with fee exemption for certain cattle transport, increases the cap for brand inspection on per head and per hide, declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that allows rather than requires the State Department of Agriculture to assess and collect fee service up to a maximum of $25, and there are some language clarifications that were requested by the Department of Agriculture. We do have a fiscal statement and which came in at about $1.2 million, and this is anticipated in the governor's budget.
That $1.2 million was a revenue, was anticipated revenue, correct?
I believe it's revenue and expenditure.
Yeah. It's a fee.
That $1.2 million was a revenue, was anticipated revenue, correct?
I believe it's revenue and expenditure.
It's a fee.
Right. Lisa Hansen and Jim Welsh. You're the only two to testify today, and the committee intends to move the bill forward. So, and Mr. Welsh, you've seen the Dash 1 amendments, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the chance to visit with you again on Senate Bill 236. This is the agency's bill to increase the fees in our brand inspection program. It also represents modifications to the brand inspection program that were developed over about the last year working with an advisory group, which ultimately makes brand inspection, of course, is voluntary. We appreciate the opportunity to work with you on the amendments, and they meet the intent of that group as well, so thank you.
Mr. Welsh? Chair Baking and committee members, Jim Welsh, Oregon Cattlemen Association. We brought these to you and asked for you to provide these amendments, and we've been working with the department very closely on this, and they're doing what we have asked them to do.
I appreciate the two of you working together on this and getting it back before us. With that, I'm going to questions committee. Then I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 236, and I'll open up a work session on 236. I entertain a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 236.
Thank you, Senator Bates, for moving the Dash 1s. Committee, any discussion or objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, does this bill have to go to Ways and Means because there's a fee in it?
I do not think there is a subsequent referral on this.
No.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 236 as amended to the Senate floor that do pass. My mind's a blank. Recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bates, for moving the bill to the floor that do pass recommendation committee. Any discussion or objections? And seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bates, will you carry?
I'd be glad to carry this.
Senator Bates.
I'll be glad to. My wife is now calling me an Equidae in public and not one of the other three, so I think it's a real improvement for me.
With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, Senator Bates.